I think it shows that the voters, by just the thinnest of margins, have confidence.
Absentee votes changed the outcome of a ballot initiative in the Mat-Su Valley. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 14th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the State Board of Game puts a plan for black bear trapping on hold.
We really dodged a big bullet here. Well, they were really trying to sneak this by with very little public input and public knowledge.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The Fairbanks Borough is not weighing in on claims of its former mayor, Jim Whitaker, that Senate candidate Joe Miller broke ethics rules while an employee. Whitaker told APRN and other news outlets yesterday that Miller used borough work computers for partisan politics in 2008. Whitaker alleges that Miller was trying to get the state Republican chairman, Randy Riedrich, ousted. At the time, Miller was a part-time lawyer for the borough. Whitaker says he was disciplined in writing for breaking the ethics policy, but didn't lose his job because the borough needed him to wrap up work on an oil pipeline tax dispute. Miller resigned from borough employment 5 months later. Miller would not comment today to APRN. His campaign said it's not discussing the issue and that his statement from earlier this week speaks for itself. On Monday, Miller's campaign invited reporters to a press conference, only to have him announce that he's not going to answer questions about his background or personal issues. Fairbanks Borough Attorney Renee Broker says the office won't comment on Whitaker's accusations. The borough released to news organizations in July a heavily redacted set of documents relating to Miller's employment. Officials say they can't release more without Miller's permission. Two news outlets, the Fairbanks Daily News Miner and the Alaska Dispatch, have filed lawsuits against the borough to get more information about Miller's time there from 2002 to 2009. Broker says the borough will comply with the law if there's a court order to turn over the information. Congressman Don Young and his challenger, Democrat Harry Crawford, today faced an audience in Juneau who were more interested in specific issues than in personal ones. Young says he voluntarily stepped down from positions that would have allowed him to use his 38 years of seniority until ethics investigations were completed. He told members of the Juneau Chamber of Commerce that he's now ready to go back to work.
And I am now in a position to be chairman of a committee again, and I will probably be a chairman. Hopefully of transportation, which I was able to pass safety lieu. It brought Juneau $92 million. Now that may be pork. I'm sure Harry supports that. That is an earmark that I have the ability to do for you. I will continue to do that when I'm reelected to the United States Congress for you because you've asked me to do that.
Crawford said that as a Republican, Young faces a majority of Democrats in the House, the Senate, and the White House, and says the congressman has not shown he is able to work with them.
I wonder how it is that you're going to change things to get the Alaska Gas Pipeline, to get Anwar open, to get the bridge into the NPRA, to get drilling going in the Chukchi and the Beaufort Sea. If you're their worst enemy and have a hard time working with them.
Young says the nation's voters will repudiate Democratic leadership, repeating his prediction that he will be a chairman next year. The forum was mostly directed by the audience, however, and their questions covered a broad range of issues that the two could face. For example, a recent Forest Service decision not to follow the Tongass Land Management Plan. Both Young and Crawford agreed the Agriculture Department had overstepped its authority. Crawford called it a reason he should be in Congress.
I think you need somebody that's inside the tent to go and convince him that we can have sustainable timber harvest here in Tongass, and I will do that.
The two also agreed on the need for more and better use of sustainable and renewable energy. Crawford has been a promoter of specific projects such as the Fire Island Wind Power Farm in Anchorage and development of the Chaknachamna Hydro Project. Young, however, found the shortcoming to be at the state level.
The state has not been aggressive enough. This administration doesn't consider hydro as renewable. They don't count that. The best renewable resource we've got, especially in Southeast Alaska, is hydro. There shouldn't be any diesel fuel burnt anywhere in the Southeast with the hydro potential we have.
The two candidates will meet again in Fairbanks on the 25th of this month. Absentee ballots have changed an election outcome in Palmer. On October 5th, Palmer City election results indicated that a proposal to have the city buy the old Matanuska-made block went down in defeat. That was before absentee ballots were counted at week's end. Now, six absentee votes have turned that defeat into a victory for the $3 million proposal. Palmer City Manager Doug Griffin.
I think it was a surprise. I think it shows that the voters, by just the thinnest of margins, have confidence and probably want the city to at least have control of that site.
The historic property contains an old mat-made warehouse and other buildings. The seven parcels included in the block are now in private hands. He says the property has cultural significance.
It is culturally significant. I mean, the icon of Palmer, the water tower, is located on a parcel of that property. So the city, I think, is going to move forward, but probably very carefully. We don't really know what we might use the property for. There are some aspects of maybe preserving some of the buildings there as for their historical purposes.
Griffin says the city plans to determine first if any of the properties need environmental work before selling bonds to pay for the purchase. One soldier is under arrest and another soldier is hospitalized after a shooting at Fort Wainwright. Army officials say the soldier accused in the Tuesday night shooting is a member of the 1st Stryker Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division. Officials have not released his name or the name of the victim, whose condition was listed in as good with non-life-threatening injuries. Officials say the Stryker soldier shot the other soldier in a parking lot near a barracks using a .45 caliber gun. Army spokesman Major Bill Kuppernall says the shooting is under investigation. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a detox unit for chronic inebriates reopens.
We're just very pleased that Cliff Row has once again made the commitment to serve this part of the community. It's a really fragile population.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
Hello, I'm Peter Kenyon, NPR foreign correspondent and former APRN reporter. Help support APRN's news mission by joining me on October 24th for the first of the new APRN speaker series. Go to APRN.org to reserve your ticket today.
The state's game board has put a decision on black bear snaring on hold until 2012. The proposal before the board's special meeting in Anchorage would have allowed for black bear trapping with snares in six interior game management units. Critics of the plan protested the lack of public input on the proposal. Wade Willis heads Science Now Project.
There was no science backing up the proposal. There was no justification for taking such drastic action out of the traditional board cycle when this issue was scheduled to be heard. I believe that the voice of reason prevailed.
Willis is a former state and federal biologist now working in a public advocacy capacity. State fish and game representatives told the board the bear snaring plan would complement current predator control practices in some areas. Two game management units already have bear trapping programs under a state predator control plan. Those two units were removed from the proposal. Fish and game officials had asked the board to defer the decision until the Board of Game meets in Ketchikan later this year to give the public time to weigh in on the issue. The board agreed to that plan. The next board meeting on South Central issues takes place in March of next year.
We really dodged a big bullet here. You know, they were really trying to sneak this by with very little public input and public knowledge. And we made sure that that was nipped in the bud and that the public has full participation.
Currently, it is estimated that there are some 100,000 black bears in the state. Bear trapping has not been legal in Alaska since statehood in 1959. Congressman Don Young has introduced legislation aimed at increasing sea otter harvests and pelt sales in South Central and Southeast Alaska. The move is targeting a growing population of marine mammals that are consuming more and more shellfish in Southeast. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has the story.
The nearly 40-year-old Marine Mammal Protection Act allows Alaska natives to catch otters for subsistence use. It limits sales to pelts turned into handicrafts, clothing, and similar objects. Alaska Congressman Don Young wants to allow natives to increase subsistence harvests and sell whole otter pelts.
I believe this is a way that the state, in fact, could set, or even the federal government, depends who has control over the sea otter, an amount of take that would sustain the species and give value to it into a village or into an individual native person that wants the interest of taking the sea otter.
Most of Alaska's sea otters were wiped out by Russian and later American hunters during the 1800s and early 1900s. Their decimated numbers led to protection measures nearly a century ago. But in recent years, their presence in Southeast has greatly increased. Commercial fishermen and shellfish farmers say their livelihood is being threatened by the growing population. Julianne Curry is executive director of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association.
You know, the sea otter growth in Southeast Alaska has caused a lot of concern for many folks here, and not just commercial fishermen who use the Dungeness resources and a lot of the shellfish resources, but also subsistence and personal use harvesters who are finding it harder and harder to be able to get food to fill their freezers because of the otter growth.
Young says he introduced the legislation after hearing from fishermen. Icicle Seafood's Petersburg fleet manager, Randy Lantine, says he's heard from them too.
We've seen fleet consolidation into areas that do not have an otter presence. And overall, we're seeing Dungeness crab harvest numbers, especially landed in Petersburg here, on the decline as the otters become more prevalent.
Environmental and animal rights groups oppose the bill. California's Jim Curlin works on sea otters for the organization Defenders of Wildlife.
We don't support fisheries management through predator control. It's been tried in California and it's been a disaster. It's just not the way you deal with fisheries conflicts.
He says the marine mammals play an important part in coastal waterways' natural balance. That's because they eat things that eat kelp.
It's been demonstrated when you have sea otters in a system, you have a healthy kelp forest ecosystem with a great deal of other species like fish, crabs, urchins, and a variety of invertebrate animals. When you don't have sea otters, when they're missing from the picture, you have a lack of a healthy kelp forest ecosystem.
Defenders of Wildlife also opposes Young's plan to allow full pelts to be sold. Curlin says poachers will take advantage of subsistence otter harvests' minimal oversight.
Once you put forth legislation to broaden the definition of what's allowable to be taken, I think you open it up to non-natives. You can't monitor who's taking what, and I think it just opens up a whole can of worms.
Young, a Republican running for another term in the U.S. House, says it will be hard to push through increased catch rates. The photogenic animals resemble stuffed toys and are popular subjects for wildlife watching tours.
I know those who say, well, that's their before us, ours. I argue that there's room for both, but we ought to be able to manage the sea otters as we can be managed ourselves.
The bill has not become a major campaign issue for Young. Challenger Harry Crawford, a Democratic state lawmaker, says he wants more information before he takes a stand on the issue.
It's something that I would want to have good science behind me. I'd like to talk to Fish and Game to see if the numbers of otters would actually support any extra pressure, and also to native people and to crab fishermen and other stakeholders before I would make a decision on, you know, whether this change could be made.
There's little chance Young's bill will see much action this fall, since lawmakers are taking long campaign season recesses. but it could easily be reintroduced next year. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka.
Following state approval and after several months of suspended service, the Salvation Army reopened its specialized treatment unit at Clitheroe Center in Anchorage. KSKA's Len Anderson has the story.
We're just very pleased that Clitheroe has once again made the commitment to serve this part of the community. It's a really fragile population.
Stacy Toner is director of the State Division of Behavioral Health. She describes how last May the state ordered the specialized treatment unit at Clitheroe's Alcohol and Substance Abuse Center closed.
There were some health and safety concerns in terms of our worry that patients were not going to be maintained safely in the facility. And so we had to ask them to close while they addressed some of those concerns.
The closure involved 6 detoxification and 4 specialized substance abuse treatment beds. The state's order did not affect Clitheroe's more than 50 residential clients, nor its outpatient substance abuse programs. The Clitheroe Center is run by the Salvation Army's Alaska Division. Jenny Raglan is its spokesperson.
It is a pilot program, so sometimes there are little bumps and hurdles that we encounter when new programs are open and operating, and we're just really glad that we were able to work through those issues and review the standards and work cooperatively with the state and get the doors reopened.
The pilot detoxification program and specialized treatment unit arose from modifications to the state's Title 47 laws. Title 47 deals with involuntary commitment situations. State Senator Johnny Ellis of Anchorage proposed the changes as a way to help individuals whose alcohol abuse posed an immediate danger to themselves. After the new law passed, the Salvation Army agreed to work with the state to provide the special detox unit at its Clitheroe facility. It's the only such program in Alaska.
Chronic public inebriates who are determined by a medical professional can be placed into the Salvation Army Specialized Treatment Unit under a 48-hour hold and placed into the detox unit. Once that 48-hour hold is coming to conclusion, there can be an extension granted, again, under court order for up to 30 days for that individual to remain in detox and or treatment.
The initial referral can come from the authorities or, in some cases, family members. Although Clitheroe has helped alcoholics for years, the ones coming into the special detoxification unit often had multiple problems, and that situation could present safety issues beyond what the facility normally encountered.
We're talking about people who come with multiple medical issues in addition to dealing with the physical issues of addiction and life maybe on the streets or life with not a lot of daily functioning skills.
Beyond the time needed to improve the safety elements to the state's satisfaction, Raglan says the rehiring process also extended the closure. The detoxification staff positions had to be filled again, with careful attention to qualifications, plus there was a new nurse manager position required. But Raglan says the timing for the reopening could not be better. With the weather starting to turn cold, the detoxification unit can once again offer help to the most fragile of the chronic inebriates living on Anchorage streets. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfort. Details at condor.com. ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at achia.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
the dam failure and toxic sludge release last week at an ore processing plant in Hungary has raised questions about similar potential at other mine facilities. The Fort Knox gold mine, northeast of Fairbanks, maintains a large dam that holds back a 300-acre tailings pond. The 4,000-foot-long, more than 300-foot-high dam built in the 1990s is the largest in the state. Alaska Department of Natural Resources dam safety engineer Charlie Cobb says it was designed and constructed to high integrity standards, and there's minimal risk of the kind of catastrophic failure that occurred in Hungary.
We're confident that the Fort Knox Dam is designed and operated in a safe condition, and the people there at Fort Knox are very conscientious about that structure and go to great lengths to demonstrate its safety to the department.
Cobb says the dam that failed in Hungary was a much older communist regime-era structure that likely bears little design comparison with Fort Knox.
You know, that is a very robust structure up there. It's a good design, and, you know, the design has been under significant review by the department over the course of time.
Cobb says the state requires annual inspections by a consulting engineer, as well as daily surveillance by the mine's operator. A seep was found under the Fort Knox Dam in 2006, but it was determined to be water from a sub-dam fissure in the bedrock, and no tailing solution was released. A monitoring system below the dam detects any seepage. The state is currently taking public comment on Fort Knox's plan to raise the dam height 52 feet to accommodate additional tailings and waste fluid. The sludge released from the Hungarian facility is from aluminum processing and contains lead and other heavy metals that have killed 9 and sickened many others. Fort Knox environmental manager Delbert Parr says the slurry stored in Fort Knox is much less toxic.
Part of the year it will almost make drinking water standards. During the winter months when there's a lot of ice and no exposure to open air on the pond down there, we will get build up cyanide to about 5 or 6 parts per million. That's certainly not harmless, but it's not a very high rate either.
The Fort Knox gold mine's tailing pond contains about 16 million gallons of slurry, far less than the Hungarian sludge reservoir, which released 200 million gallons. The Fort Knox facility is located in a valley 25 miles northeast of Fairbanks, more remote than the Hungarian site. The state's Cobb says even if there was a catastrophic dam failure at Fort Knox, the impacts would not be like what's happening in Hungary. Representatives from the North End Port Authority based in Kaufman Cove met with Wrangell officials over the past few days to unveil a new plan to bring ferry service back to Kaufman Cove, Petersburg, and Wrangell. The Inter-Island Ferry Authority ran a route to and from those communities until last year when operations ceased due to a lack of funding and low ridership. KSTK's Tony Gorman reports.
Last year, the IFA turned to the state for funding with no success. Kent Miller explains the group's new business plan.
The business plan includes 4 trips a week on the Kaufman Cove Wrangell South Mitkoff route and 3 trips a week between Kaufman Cove and Ketchikan.
The managing member of the Alaska Sea Roads LLC and private consultant for the group says the summer schedule will also include round trips on Sundays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. He says there will also be a winter schedule that would include 3 trips a week among the 3 towns.
The winter timetable would be round trips on Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Miller says the schedules would not conflict with the Alaska Marine Highway System. The route's vessel would be smaller than IFA's marine vessels, Prince of Wales and Stikine.
It operates with a crew of 3 and substantially less fuel cost than the Prince of Wales and Stikine. So it enables it to operate out of the fare box with a reasonable forecast of traffic.
Miller says the group already has a lease purchase in hand for the ferry. As for funding, Miller says it has applied for a loan through the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Program and financing from GE Government Finance.
We have with the lease purchase of the vessel proposed by GE Government Finance, about two-thirds of the necessary funding accounted for.
Miller says it expects a decision on a preliminary commitment from the USDA by the end of this month. Overall, Miller says the ferry is expected to do well financially. Kaufman Cove Mayor Misty Fitzpatrick and Tourism Coordinator and North End Port Authority Board Member Heather Phillips Hedges presented the plan during a two-day swing through Wrangell and Petersburg. Following a 30-minute presentation to the Wrangell Assembly, Phillips Hedges says she thinks the route will help cut travel costs. She says her and Fitzpatrick's trip would have been easier if the northern route was running.
As far as our experience getting out here, was very difficult for us. We had to leave a day early because we didn't, you know, we had to fly. It's pretty costly.
Fitzpatrick added the ferry could add more revenue to local businesses along the route.
We'd be promoting that people come over to Wrangell on the ferry and take Breakaway up to Stikine or take Sunrise to, you know, on one of their various tours. So at the same time they were taking one portion away, we're hoping to add even more.
Voters gave the city of Kaufman Cove the thumbs up to create the Port Authority in last year's election. IFA Board Chairman Dennis Watson says when it was created, it became a problem.
IFA, you know, under state law, is a Port Authority, and Kaufman Cove is a member of that Port Authority. And when they chose to develop their own, then all of a sudden we have two competing port authorities, you know, on the same island.
A competition that could have financial repercussions.
You know, the funding that be it private or state or federal, you know, that is available for port authorities, you know, that puts us in competition for that funding.
Watson says he hasn't seen the group's plan, but thinks it's a hard sell right now due to the economy. He says ridership on the IFA Southern Round has felt the impact. The IFA plans to meet on November 3rd to discuss more on the Port Authority issue. As for the Rainforest Islands Ferry, representatives from the North End Port Authority have expressed interest in working with the IFA. Watson says so far no such plan has been presented. Reporting from Wrangell, I'm Tony Gorman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Tony Gorman in Wrangell. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Are home heating costs more than you can manage? If you're living on a fixed income or reduced income, the Heating Assistance Program may be able to help. To obtain more information or an application form, visit the Heating Assistance Program website at heatinghelp.alaska.gov or call 1-800-470-3058. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Working late? Hear Alaska News Nightly at any time of the day on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.